Roland stood up with a wince, clamped his hand briefly to his hip, then said, "Thank you, Sai Shimi. You helped us greatly." Shimi smiled uncertainly. "How did I do that?"
"Never mind, my dear."
Roland turned his attention to Ted. "My friends and I are going to step outside briefly. We need to speak, Aunt Tet."
"Of course," Ted said.
He shook his head as if to clear it. "Do my peace of mind a favor and keep it short," Dinky said. "We're probably still all right, but I don't want to push our luck."
"Will you need him to jump you back inside?" Eddie asked, nodding to Shimi.
This was in the nature of a rhetorical question. How else would the three of them get back?
"Well, yeah, but," Dinky began. "Then you'll be pushing your luck plenty."
That said, Eddie, Susanna, and Jake followed Roland out of the cave. Hoy stayed behind, sitting with his new friend, Halas of Chavin. Something about that troubled Jake. It wasn't a feeling of jealousy, but rather one of dread. As if he were seeing an omen someone wiser than himself, one of the Mani folk, perhaps, could interpret. But would he want to know? Perhaps not. 6.
"I didn't remember my dream until he told his," Susanna said. "And if he hadn't told his, I probably never would have remembered."
"Yeah," Jake said.
"But I remember it clearly enough now," she went on. "I was in a subway station, and the boy came down the stairs."
Jake said,
"I was in Gage Park.
And I was at the Markey Avenue playground where me and Henry used to play one-on-one," Eddie said. "In my dream, the kid with the bloody face was wearing a t-shirt that said, 'Never a dull moment in mid-world,'" Jake finished. And Eddie gave him a startled look.
Jake barely noticed. His thoughts had turned in another direction.
"I wonder if Stephen King ever uses dreams in his writing, you know, as yeast to make the plot rise?"